This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employee seminar held on February 4, 2026 in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Well, I scurried around one morning getting ready for the opening of the Reno County Farmers Market. It was a hot summer morning. I was unloading stuff, getting my sign set up, getting ready for people to show up. My wife and I raised beef, pork, and chicken, and we sold it at the farmers market. And as the early morning crowd of mostly older people grew, I met Janet for the first time. Energetic and wearing an infectious smile, she bounced over to our booth and immediately struck up an enjoyable conversation. Throughout the summer, I always enjoyed when Janet stopped by our booth and picked up a few cuts of meat for the week. And as we got to know each other better, I learned a little more about her history and her story. I learned that she and her husband had moved back to Hutchinson, which was his hometown. We live in Hutchinson, Kansas. Which was his hometown when they retired. And during the 1980s, her husband Jace had founded Primus Inc., which brought to market the first accurate and reliable automated hemoglobin A1C test for diabetic therapy. And at the time, a noted endocrinologist, Lois Jovanic Peterson, predicted that the Primus A1C test would add thousands of years of healthy life to this generation of juvenile diabetics. The test went on to become the accepted standard by which other A1C tests were measured. And Janet had been involved in the operation and the founding of Primus Inc., but she had spent most of her career as in-house legal counsel for a variety of large corporations. Now both retired, they were living in small town Hutchinson, Kansas. But Janet was completely unsatisfied with the idea of sitting at home all day. And so she set about the work of building community all around her. She built community at her weekly exercise class. She built relationships with the vendors at the farmers market and many, many other places. In our weekly conversations, she was really supportive of the property management work that my wife Dorcas and I were starting. The market season ended at the end of the summer, and I didn't see Janet all winter. The next spring, we picked up right where we left off with our weekly conversations. And later that summer, she said she'd like to visit with me about something and asked if I would join her for lunch sometime. So, over burgers at the Dutch Kitchen, she told me that she was inspired by how we were building our property management business, and that she believed in me and Dorcas. And she offered to help us however she could. For Janet, at that point in her life, money wasn't the primary consideration. And she was willing to do whatever we needed for whatever we could afford to pay her. And that's how, in my first year in business, Janet became one of my first team members. She helped me with property management, with accounting, and provided invaluable legal advice for the smallest fraction of the salary that she had been accustomed to making. And I learned so much from Janet over the next years. She made sure that our contracts were clear and airtight. But when it came time to enforce them, she always started with our organizational value of shared abundance. And we say we do not have to win at the expense of others' losses. Rather, in a market and world of abundance, there is plenty for all. We have been richly blessed, and we are stewards of great financial, relational, and influential wealth. The details were right, but she started with value. Now, our religious practice varied broadly. I attend and am a member of, I grew up in, the Amish Mennonite Church. She attended the Prairie Unitarian Universalist Church, which says, our beliefs are diverse and inclusive. We have no shared creed. Our shared covenant is expressed through the inseparable and deeply interconnected shared values of interdependence, pluralism, justice, transformation, generosity, and equity, all centered around love. Although Unitarianism and Universalism both have origins as liberal Christian traditions, today we embrace diverse teachings from many global religions and philosophies. And Janet wholeheartedly embraced our business's mission value, frankly, more than some conservative Anabaptists I know. Our business's mission value says our work matters because it is an act of service and worship to God. We honor who He has created us to be by using our best gifts at work. We affirm that excellence in business is a noble and godly pursuit and reject the false dichotomy of choosing sacred or secular values in business, rather believing that faith in God and His goodness provides the lens through which we view all issues and decisions. At one point, Janet found out that I had lost most of a week of sleep, sitting up at night, trying unsuccessfully to figure out how we were going to stay financially afloat after a private lender had passed away unexpectedly and the family chose to exercise the call clause that said in case of disaster or death, they could call the loan. There was no way we were going to pay that back and keep our doors open. We were done. So I'd spend a lot of sleepless nights trying to figure out how to navigate out of that. There were no options. And when we talked about it, Janet's first response was, well, I'll loan you the money. How much do you need? And the next day, she brought her checkbook with her to work, and she wrote me a check for the amount that we needed to stay open. Several years later, when COVID hit, after Janet had moved on, she'd moved back to California, she called me and said, you should quit making those payments on the loan for the next year. Don't send me another check. Use that money to help tenants who are struggling with job loss and other rising expenses. Once, when Janet felt like a member of our local Mennonite community was being misunderstood and portrayed in a court case in ways that simply didn't seem congruent with the way that she knew our community, she offered to coordinate a meeting between her friend the judge and a local pastoral team to get clearer understanding of the values and perspectives of both parties. Now, if Janet and I could have been more different, I don't know how. I was young and dumb, blundering around trying to start a business, and she was a retired working woman with a wealth of experience in areas I will never have a wealth of experience in. I was a member of one of the most conservative parts of Christendom. Her church was only loosely tied to Christianity. I come from a culture that sees most things through pretty black and white lenses. She was an aging hippie. We couldn't have been more different, except for how we saw the work. When we walked through the doors of our office, we were in lockstep because we both believed that the Rock Group should be a place where hardworking, whole people do work that matters to serve ourselves and our families, our team, and our community. We were aligned in the purpose of our work and on the values that guided us along the way to fulfilling that purpose. This morning, I want you to know that unity of purpose in diversity is possible so that you grow in relationships and effectiveness with people who are different from you. So what is unity? And I want to gather some information from you. And fair warning, I'm pretty happy to call on people. Those of you that were here yesterday might be preparing yourself. But what do we mean by unity? When you think about unity, what is it? Something in common. Good. What else? Somebody from the first three tables over here. What is unity? Working together. Move back several tables. What do we have? What's unity? Helping others. Good. I saw somebody up here. Arlen, were you raising your hand? Well, you are now. What's unity? Common goals. Being in the same spirit. What else? Pulling in the same direction. Common goals. Pulling in the same direction. Being in the same spirit. Moving together. How is that different from uniformity? You'll remember in the session title, I think they gave us the assignment, or they gave me the assignment, or the session blurb says, the workplace often brings people together from diverse backgrounds, including various church practices, as well as those with little or no religious affiliation at all. How can we build respectful, authentic relationships across cultural and spiritual lines? How can we achieve unity without uniformity? So we've got some ideas about what unity is. What's uniformity? Uniformity requires everything to be the same. Unity is everyone working together to deliver the product or service to the customer. Uniformity is everybody wearing the same uniform while doing it. Uniformity sees differences as unacceptable. Unity is clear about purpose and has grace for differences along the way. Uniformity says there is only one right way to do something. Unity says that regardless of our perspective, we all have to move forward together. Uniformity kicks out or changes or forces change on anything or anyone that doesn't fit the mold. Unity pulls all of the parts together to make progress on the purpose. We are not the first people to struggle with what this looks like. Paul, when writing to the Corinthian church about exercising spiritual gifts, talks about how unity is crucial in the body, but uniformity would actually make the body, the whole body, ineffective. 1 Corinthians 12, verses 12 through 27 says, "For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For in one spirit we are all baptized into one body, Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, and all were made to drink of one spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, 'Because I am not of the hand, I do not belong to the body,' that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, 'Because I am not the eye, I do not belong to the body,' where would the sense of hearing? Where would be the sense of hearing? If the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as it is, God arranged the members of the body, each one of them, as He chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, 'I have no need of you,' nor again the hand, the head to the feet, 'I have no need of you.' On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem weaker are indispensable, and on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor. And our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care one for another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. Now you are the body of Christ and individually members of it. I know this passage is talking about spiritual gifts, but I don't think it is a stretch at all to apply it to our work and the varying perspectives and gifts and abilities that we bring with us when we walk through the doors of our office, when we show up on the job site, when we go to work. We bring all of ourselves and we contribute who we are and how we show up to the good of the whole. So I want to hear from you again. I'm curious if you're willing to rent this idea that relationships might be difficult sometimes, and especially relationships across cultures. What makes those difficult? Why are relationships across culture difficult? What do you think? We haven't heard anything from anybody toward the back of the room over here. What makes relationship difficult across cultures? Disrespect. Yeah. Misunderstandings? Disrespect, misunderstandings. What else? What makes relationship across cultures difficult? Expectations are different. Somebody over here. Language barrier. We don't understand. Maybe we misunderstand what people are saying. We think differently. Fear. What else makes relationship across cultural barriers difficult? We tend to be biased. I got a question for you. Now, this is a great list. Thank you all. What is different about this list that we just made about what makes relationship across culture difficult than the list that we would make if we would explore what makes relationship difficult, period? There's not much difference. At least if I make that list, they sound an awful lot the same. So if you're willing to rent the idea with me that relationships across culture might be similar to relationships, period, then hopefully we can dive in and learn a little bit more about how to navigate that effectively for ourselves, in our workplaces, and in service to the greater good. Recognizing and working to overcome these relational challenges looks similar, regardless how similar or different you are from the person you're relating to. Now, just because we can understand that, and we know it's not always easy, doesn't mean it's not work worth doing. And you know, I think as long as I have a sound mind and a good memory, I will always remember the moment I heard my Uncle Vernon Smith, we called him Smitty, say, "I always liked David. He was a good man," when my grandpa, David L. Miller, passed away. Now, why was that memorable? It was such a simple statement. I always liked David. He was a good man. Now, when I heard it, I felt like I just had this sense that I was standing on holy ground. And I knew, and I had that sense because that simple statement encapsulated a lifetime of grace and relationship that was unlikely at best. So let me tell you why it was unlikely. A little bit of context here. My grandpa, David Miller, was an Amish conscientious objector, and he served 1W service as a young man in the early 1950s. My Uncle Smitty, during a very similar time period, was an American soldier who was stationed in Japan after the Korean War. And it was there, stationed in a war-devastated and economically depressed Japan, that he met and married my Aunt Chizu Iwashige. After moving back to the States, he served on the Rice County Draft Board and as a commander of the local American Legion post. My grandpa, David Miller, met with the Selective Service to try to continue building relationships to allow young men and women conscientious objector status. My uncle served on the draft board that made some determinations about that. My grandpa Iwashige, who passed away before my dad ever moved to the States and joined Smitty and Chi in Kansas, had been a soldier in the Japanese Army. Across many cultural, political, religious, and philosophical lines, the Iwashige and Miller families built genuine friendship and respect. Now, I think the list of things that all of those people would have agreed on would have been really, really short. But that was not the focus of their relationship. Genuine goodwill, interest, and understanding bridged massive divides that could have driven permanent wedges in family and community. And despite differences in values, belief, and lifestyle, David and Smitty respected and valued each other. Unity of purpose in diversity is possible. And I want you to know that. So you grow in relationships and effectiveness with people that are different from you. So if you're willing to rent that idea, the unity of purpose in relationship in diversity is possible, what do we do with it? It's all well and good to talk about growing in relationships and effectiveness with people that are different than you, but what about differences that are so big we simply can't cross them? Now, I think, and I'd like to see a show of hands here, am I right in thinking that we all agree that there are some issues that are simply non-negotiable? And we're not talking about which ones those are, but there are some non-negotiable issues, right? I'd say a strong majority there. And would we all agree that there are some issues that fall into a different category where we say, you know, I have my opinions, but there's some room for difference there. That's negotiable. Are we mostly on the same page there? Yeah, okay. So what we have is a continuum that over here we say these things we will not negotiate. And over here, we'll talk about that. We can land at different places. We all agree on that, right? What we do not agree on is where that line is. That for some, the line is here. For some, it's here. For some, it's here. So what do we do with that? I believe it is uniquely difficult for Western, conservative, Anabaptists to live with the grace and humility required to allow others to choose differently than we do without placing ourselves in a seat of judgment. And here's my theory on that. Most of us here are cultural Westerners from the Western Hemisphere who like to see the world through very logical and systematic lenses. Most of us here are American Westerners who in our history have conquered frontiers, and we have a bias that we can solve all of the world's problems by noon as long as we move quickly and just get it done. So we're cultural Westerners who want to see the world logically and systematically, who want to solve all of the world's problems by noon. We are cultural Westerners, most of us, or many of us, of Germanic background, who want to solve all of the world's problems by noon in such a way that we never have to solve them again. And we do that in a faith tradition that very core in our DNA is the belief that what we live must put on work shoes and walk out of the door. And I love that about our culture. I say amen that we live out of what we believe. But because we live out of what we believe, not knowing exactly what we believe, or if it is the right way, is simply untenable. We cannot say, I don't know. And we believe that every decision we make is an expression of faithfulness and salvation, and the costs of being wrong are high. We live out of what we believe, so being wrong is not only hard on our ego, but it carries with it the weight of a wasted life. We're cultural Westerners that see the world through a logical and systematic lens, who want to solve all of the world's problems by noon in such a way that we never have to solve them again, and every decision we make has a direct and immediate connection to our faith and belief. And I fear that our need for certainty sometimes, that we are living rightly, often leads us to live with attitudes of pride, of arrogance, and self-righteousness, where we reserve the right for ourselves to judge others for the sin of making different choices. And if this is true, that is not the way of Christ. And where we are guilty of this sin, I pray that we repent. I want you to know that unity of purpose in diversity is possible, so you grow in relationships and effectiveness with people who are different from you. About a year ago, on a cold December night, about a week before Christmas, 80-year-old Gary took out his wallet and his phone. He put them on the counter. He kissed his wife, Lana, of 58 years, goodnight, and he went to bed. Several hours later, when Lana got tired, she went to bed as well and discovered that Gary, with advancing Alzheimer's, was not there. She called 911. She called family. Family called other people in the community, and immediately there was a search party formed to go out and look for Gary in a rural Kansas pasture land when it was 20 degrees outside. People walked, searched with flashlights until about 3 o'clock in the morning, when they called the search off, said, we'll pick it up first thing in the morning again. 50 people showed up the next morning. The highway patrol pulled them out of the field. They used thermal drones. They brought in an airplane. They brought in a dog team to try to track him down. Couldn't find anything. Throughout the entire day, people walked and searched the area around Gary's farm. I joined the search that evening. After a search and rescue team from Oklahoma had come up from Kansas, they equipped us all with a downloadable app that would track where we were so we could be very methodical and thorough with our search. They divided the territory up into smaller portions and said, we're going to do a grid search. You stand 20 feet away from the next person. It's actually better to search at night because you focus on what the beam of your flashlight is shining on. You're less likely to overlook things. But something you should know is that people with dementia, when they get lost and disoriented, especially in the dark, tend to burrow deep into places you would never imagine they would be able to fit. So we went out. My team was assigned to an 80-acre parcel that was densely overgrown. We lined up 20 feet apart from each other, shone our flashlights, tripped over branches, sometimes got down and belly crawled under cedar trees, got disoriented. But we trudged on, trying to find Gary. We turned around after we had made a first pass, and it was so dense. There were some places, no amount of crawling, pushing through, lowering your head and charging, you could not get through. We sometimes simply had to move. We knew we were farther than 20 feet apart. We got through one of these really densely overgrown areas, and we looked at our tracking map and realized we had simply missed a huge area. We had gotten disoriented in the dark. So several of us turned around and went back, and it wasn't much better. So we knew that we were going to be disoriented, so we tried to navigate based on where we had already been. And that didn't work very well. Because by the time the app caught on to where we had been, we were already off track again. It was discouraging. We knew that the risk of not doing our job well could be the difference between life and death for an elderly man with dementia. It was important that we did our job well. There was one guy who didn't bring a flashlight to the search. He brought a night vision helmet, full night vision helmet, that had a little blue light blinking on top. All of the rest of us gauged where we were based on where other people's flashlights were. Apparently, it was broad daylight for him. And he just wandered around, sometimes just crossing into other people's territory. I don't know what he was seeing, but it sure wasn't very helpful. And so we simply adjusted, and we said, well, looks like he's going to be over here for a while, so I'll go over here. But we had to find Gary. We had to do a methodical search. The landscape was disorienting. Some people were just wandering around all over the place. But we needed to track straight. And finally, it occurred to me, you know, there is something that is not moving here tonight. And I looked up, and I picked a triangle of stars. And for the rest of the evening, if I'd look up, I could navigate by the stars, because they didn't move, at least not fast enough to make a difference. Regardless where I was, regardless what tree I had just walked around, regardless what tree I had just crawled under, I could look up and reorient to where I should be going. And I think there are some lessons that we can learn here. When we are finding our way as a team, but we are not carefully coordinating and working with each other to make progress together, we miss important work along the way. And when we can see the path ahead clearly and charge on without knowledge or regard for how it affects other people, we get in the way of progress. We can't navigate by looking back at where we've been. The only way we can accomplish our mission is when we know what our goal is and the purpose that will guide us there, and organizationally and individually, we constantly make adjustments and course corrections so that we arrive at our destination together, not having missed anything or anyone along the way. The first tool of unity of purpose in diversity is get clear about purpose. Second tool, and we'll hear much more about this later, is to check your ego. Is it more important to make progress on the purpose or that you are right? Once you are clear and aligned about the purpose of your work, there are still choices to be made about how to get there. One of the beautiful things about working with the team is that everyone has a slightly different perspective to offer. One of the potentially really ugly things about working with the team is that everyone has a slightly different perspective to offer. Make sure you are focused on progress of the shared purpose, not getting hung up on the details or how exactly you make progress on that, or insisting that your way is the right way. The second tool to build unity and diversity is to check your ego. Is it more important to make progress on the purpose or that you are right? The third tool of making progress on purpose and diversity is describing the other person as they might describe themselves in noble terms. Have you ever heard, or maybe you've said, about somebody else, "They don't care about us. They don't care about how that decision affects us. All they care about is making money. They can't stand when somebody else has a better idea than they do. He's so selfish, he never thinks about other people. I think he tries to make us mad. There's no other explanation for why he acts that way." Have you heard some of these things? If you said them, you don't have to raise your hand. But am I tracking, or is this just happening in my world? Yeah. You know what I have heard? Never. Somebody saying, "I don't care about you or how that decision affects you. All I care about is making money. I can't stand when somebody else has a better idea than me. I'm so selfish that I never think about other people. You know, I try to make people mad just to make them mad." So what's the difference? If we say that about other people, but we don't say it about ourselves, why not? I think we describe ourselves in noble terms, but often describe others and their actions in far less noble terms. So when you're confused or upset with someone else, try to describe what they are doing as they might describe themselves. Put yourself in their shoes and see the situation through their eyes. And once you more fully understand their perspective, you can more effectively engage in conversation to find common ground so that you can move forward together. Third tool to build unity and diversity: describe the other person as they might describe themselves in noble terms. The fourth tool is to respect the person even if you disagree with their opinion. I've heard people say, "Sure, everyone is entitled to their own stupid opinion, but some people abuse the privilege." Eleanor Roosevelt, many years ago, said, "Great minds discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, and small minds discuss people." And there are undoubtedly going to be times in your life, like in mine, where you are clear about the purpose and you've searched your heart and tried to manage your ego. You've tried to see the issue through another person's lens and you still have differences between you and a coworker. And it is okay to disagree. It is okay to vehemently disagree with a person's position. It is not okay to disrespect the person when you disagree with their position. Vigorous discussion and disagreement can help get clarity. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Indicates that beautiful things can come from lots of heat and friction, but that beauty and effectiveness is lost when we stop talking about and discerning the issue and start discussing and criticizing the person. And I won't spend a lot of time on this, but if you'd like to explore a fascinating story of leadership and progress in the face of nearly insurmountable differences, I'd recommend Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals. It's a long, but it's a fascinating read, and explores how Abe Lincoln was the unlikely winner of an election in which he ran against three strong candidates in the 1860 presidential election. And after he was elected, he held firm to conviction in the face of fractures within and without and built a team of rivals. William Seward was widely considered the most powerful Republican in the country. He assumed he would win the election and run the administration. Salmon Chase was a brilliant, ambitious candidate in the 1860 election and openly maneuvered to replace Lincoln as president after he had been elected. Edward Bates was an older, respected, but very ideologically different candidate and who added legitimacy and balance. All three of these people ran against Lincoln in the 1860 election. After Lincoln won, he invited all three of them to serve in his cabinet. Lincoln understood things that many of us miss. Unity is shared purpose, not shared personality or opinion. Different backgrounds strengthen legitimacy. Internal diversity makes the administration more resilient. If your team looks and thinks the same, you are optimized for comfort, not survival. If your team looks and thinks the same, you are optimized for comfort, not survival. So when we pop up, when we get above the fray and we think about what's most important, what is that? Matthew 22:37 says, "And he said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." So how can we build respectful, authentic relationships across cultural and spiritual lines? How can we achieve unity without uniformity? We build respectful, authentic relationships across cultural and spiritual lines in much the same way we build any relationship. We build relationships by pursuing and building unity, not focusing on uniformity. We do it by seeing and appreciating different people and perspectives as necessary and valuable parts of the system, much like the hand needs the eye and the tongue needs the brain. We build relationships by breaking down the walls that divide us and communicating in sincerity and vulnerability. We build relationships by being aware of how our background and perspective shape the way we see the world. And we are clear about which issues are negotiable and which issues are non-negotiable. Relationships across cultures at work are better when we're clear about purpose. We have to check our ego and decide whether it's more important for us to be right or to make progress together. We build relationships when we try to see issues from other people's perspectives. And finally, genuine relationship is possible when we respect the person, even if we disagree with their position. Unity of purpose in diversity is possible. And I hope you continue to grow in relationships and effectiveness with people who are different from you.